Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. But Jim, as it has been so many times in this 2016 presidential campaign, the good news is really bad news that someone has the courage to point out. But we take what we can get, and this comes from Campbell Brown. No conservative, from what I remember, from her days at NBC and CNN, but she wrote a blistering rebuke of the media for Politico earlier this week. I'm going to read a few excerpts here. It starts by saying, "My friends in the TV news business are in a state of despair about Donald Trump, even as their bosses in the boardroom are giddy over what he's doing for their once sagging ratings. It feels like it's over," one old friend from my television days told me recently. "Any hope of practicing real journalism on TV is finally finished. Look, we've always done a lot of stupid crap to get ratings, but now it's like we've just given up and literally handed over control, hoping he'll save us. It's pathetic, and I feel like hell," said another friend covering the presidential campaign for cable news. "I'm swilling antidepressants trying to figure out what to do with my life when this is over." Later on, she says, "I really would like to blame Trump, but everything he is doing is with TV news full acquiescence. Trump doesn't force the networks to show his rallies live rather than do real reporting, nor does he force anyone to accept his phone calls rather than demand that he do a face-to-face interview that would be a greater risk to him. TV news has largely given Trump editorial control. It is driven by a hunger for ratings, and the people who run the networks and the news channels are only too happy to make that Faustian bargain." She says it's not just the network and cable executives driving it. The TV anchors and senior executives who don't deliver are mercilessly ousted. The ones who do deliver are lavishly rewarded for higher ratings. I know from personal experience that it's common practice for TV anchors to have substantial bonuses written into their contracts if they hit ratings marks. With this 2016 presidential soap opera, they're almost surely hitting those marks, so we get all Trump all the time. Jim, hard to argue with the logic there. Some people may like it more than we do or Campbell Brown does, but the dereliction of the media has been exposed again in this piece, and good on Campbell Brown for doing it.
Yeah, two thoughts come to mind. One, we should point out, Greg, that Campbell Brown, for not being an outward, conservative, married to Dan Senor, the former Bush administration official from the Iraq days, and also has been very active in education reform, including promotion, school choice, and charter schools. So if she's not one of us, Greg, she's not too far from us, and certainly enough reasons for folks on the left to kind of regard her with suspicion. And I think this might be another reason that she's kind of just openly spilling the beans about how the cable news world kind of works. We always knew broadly that shows with good ratings and lots of viewers, the hosts would make more money than ones with smaller ratings and fewer viewers. But the idea of there being specific performance bonuses for hitting a particular rating, well, gee, if you know that Donald Trump gets ratings, you know, that gives you an enormous incentive to host the candidate who gives you the best ratings. And, you know, there are a lot of reasons to not have, say, Jim Gilmore on your show, that, you know, but both Kasich and Cruz are getting about 1/6 the coverage that Trump is. It's been pretty clear that they you know, the cable news selected the Republican nominee a long time ago. I'll just leave it to listeners to see if they think there's anybody on cable news who they think has been particularly egregious about basically turning over his show and his entire hour-long slot to Trump for, you know, on a weekly basis. Or it could be anybody. Or her, Greg. We'll let listeners, you know, let do their own detective work there. But it certainly does explain why cable news has fallen in love with Donald Trump so effusively. And they give him the microphone. They broadcast his rally live, something they really very rarely do for Cruz or Kasich. And it indicates one reason of why this election turned out the way it did.
Amazing. Amazing. And it's still going on. We'll see how that changes, if at all, going forward, if Trump is in fact the nominee. But if ratings are all they care about, it probably won't change. So on to the bad martini now. And Jim, we don't count on the left to have much taste when it comes to having some dignity and respect in even the slightest way for conservative figures. But we've reached a new low, perhaps. This is from Variety. Having already famously portrayed former President George W. Bush in various comedy sketches, Will Ferrell is now setting his sights on another former commander-in-chief. Sources tell Variety Ferrell is attached to star as President Reagan in the Blacklist script Reagan. The story begins at the start of the then president's second term when he falls into dementia, and an ambitious intern is tasked with convincing the commander-in-chief that he is an actor playing the president in a movie. The script was so popular following its announcement on the Blacklist, an annual catalog of the top unproduced scripts in Hollywood, that a live read was recently done in March featuring Lena Dunham, John Cho, and James Brolin. And it goes on and on. The Reagan children here, not happy at all. Michael Reagan on Twitter, what an outrage. Alzheimer's is not a joke. It kills. You should be ashamed, all of you. Patty Davis, who's an excellent, excellent writer, writing an open letter to Will Ferrell, talking about, quote, I watched as fear invaded my father's eyes, this man who was never afraid of anything. I heard his voice tremble as he stood in the living room and said, I don't know where I am. I watched helplessly as he reached for memories, for words that were suddenly out of reach and moving farther away. She invites Ferrell, if he's trying to find comedy material on Alzheimer's, to visit an Alzheimer's home or a support group where families are absolutely devastated by this. Jim, in addition to the fact it's been proven over and over again that Reagan did not suffer from dementia while in the White House, this is just as tasteless as it gets.
Yeah, and it really is kind of striking that this many people, at no point in this process did somebody say, hey, isn't this kind of tasteless? Isn't this kind of mean? That, you know, that you can mock Reagan for a lot of things. You don't have to like Reagan, but the idea of him suffering from a disease that made him suffer, that made his family suffer, it indicates that Ferrell doesn't have anybody in his life who has suffered this, and I guess nobody, neither does Brolin or Dunham or anybody else who had a role in it. It just seems mean. It just seems tasteless and tacky and crass. But I'll just make one kind of flip observation here, Greg, and that's that, you know, you think about it. If you want to start, people probably say Jim Garrity, author of The Weed Agency, is not the guy to start writing about, to be throwing stones at others about rewriting history or blurring fact and fiction and making fun of things that happened in Washington in the 1980s. Granted. But don't you think if you were going to mock a former president and create a comedy about the wacky goings-on in his White House, doesn't a raunchy sex comedy about Bill Clinton seem pretty straightforward there? I mean, couldn't you imagine, you know, him running around and skirt chasing and trying to hide the bimbos from Hillary and things like that? I mean, like this, you could easily see that one, but Hollywood won't do that because they like Bill Clinton. And, you know, here it is. We are, three decades largely from approaching 3 decades from the Reagan presidency, and they're still kicking him around. They're still so eager to rewrite history. Who really has dementia here, Greg?
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely disgraceful on so many levels. So let's go to the crazy martini, which is somewhat lighter fare, certainly lighter than what we've just discussed in the bad martini. But yesterday was the first round of the NFL draft. A few years ago, they turned into a 3-day affair, which has made all the wives of the world thrilled. But the first round is on Thursday nights, and the first couple picks were a couple of quarterbacks, just as everyone expected. And then, of course, the fun begins about who the other teams will take. And up until very recently, the San Diego Chargers, who had the 3rd pick, ultimately they picked a guy from Ohio State on the defensive line who was considered to be a good pick. They had been tagged in a lot of mock drafts to be taking a guy who was the left tackle from Ole Miss named Laramie Tunsil. And if the mock drafts didn't show the Chargers taking him, he was going very, very high, probably the top offensive lineman in the draft. Lo and behold, as the draft gets going yesterday, a couple of horrible things happened for Laramie Tunsil, or at least really horrible timing. His Twitter account allegedly gets hacked, some believe by his stepfather, and all of a sudden there's a video of him with a gas mask-style bong and taking bong hits from a couple of years ago. That starts the draft stock plummeting. And then the next thing you know, there's allegations that he accepted money from coaches at Ole Miss to pay bills. Later on, he held a quick press conference. He admitted to doing the bong hit, but said that wasn't any consistent part of his behavior. Then he got pressed on the money and first denied it. Then he said, yes, he did get money from his coaches. And subsequently, he was very quickly yanked from the media room. So, Jim, we've seen people's draft stock fall due to injuries in their college career or people just thinking that maybe they're not a good fit for the NFL. That was a new one on Thursday night.
Yeah, whoever Tunsil irked in his past behavior, I think we can count that as epic revenge. The difference between getting picked, let's say, third, fourth, fifth, and being picked at, I believe, was it 12th or 13th he was picked?
13 by the Dolphins, yeah.
Okay. Basically, it's about an $8 million difference. You know, that one tweet probably cost him $8 million. Now, obviously, he'll have more contracts if he stays healthy, and you know, he's still making in the neighborhood, instead of $20 million over his contract term, he's only making $12 million. So it's not like this, he's, don't cry for me, Larry Tunsil. But the bigger kind of question here is, he did this, and then afterwards, whoever is doing this, one, he said it is him in the video. This isn't, you know, somebody doing it. It's a little unusual to see somebody treating marijuana like World War One chemical warfare. It's an odd image to see. And then the subsequent thing about the, whoever it is who actually clearly has access to his phone and has found real statements. And the other thing appears that he, yes, I did get money from my coach. And this probably reopened the discussion about whether college athletes should be paid. But basically everything that could ruin him came out at one of the key moments of his life. You got to feel bad for him, but also recognize that he's been caught with his hand in the cookie jar here. Greg, the statement from the lawyer struck me as really fascinating, speculating that there had been, this really reflects poorly on the tech community for how easily hacked their products are, and the U.S. government for failing to do it. So basically it's everybody except Tunsil's fault.
Of course.
My only other observation there, Greg, is that the first 12 picks had their tunsil removed.
Ah, yes. And the Bears and Jets both took linebackers, so we got that going for us. And as much
as... when you said they picked somebody from Ohio State, everybody picked somebody from Ohio State last night. A lot of teams take the best Ohio State player available strategy.
Well,
it
tends to work for them. Being a Michigan fan, you know, when it comes to football, people think I would be upset to watch all these Buckeyes go in the first round. Oh, no. It means they won't be on the field in Columbus next year. I'm more than happy to watch them go and get rich.
Yeah, you know, co-ed as underclassmen. Go ahead, leave school.
Absolutely. No animosity anymore. And I like the Chargers in the AFC, so I'm more than happy that they got Bosa. Go ahead.
One last thought there, Greg. You mentioned that by extending the draft to 3 days or 3 nights, the NFL had been, aggravated wives everywhere. Greg, are you really watching rounds 4 through 7 Saturday?
Probably not, no.
Okay, I was going to say that, if you got your Street and Smiths, you're going through all your draft guys and all that stuff. Yes, that guy could be our special teams or practice squad player. That's dedication as a fan. I care about picks 1 through 3, and after that, after that, I don't even have the energy to boo.
Yeah, no, it's exactly right. And by the time you get through the second and certainly into the third round, if you actually tell people you've heard of most of these players by then, you're probably lying.
Or you're a diehard college football fan. Either way, good for you, but yeah.
Mel Kiper knows who they are.
Yes. And that's his job. Odds are it's not your job. So,
right.
If you're positioning him as, this guy, in about 3 years, he could really be a player. Okay, coaches might not be there. Teams might relocate by that time, but that's long-term planning.
Jim, enjoy the second and third rounds tonight, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great weekend, everyone. Tune in again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.